disciplinary complaint filed against Todd Rokita, girls' mental health at a perilous low, plus resigning legislators, and more. From the television studios at WFYI, it's Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 22nd, 2023.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, the Indiana Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission wants the court to discipline Attorney General Todd Rokita for comments he made about Dr. Caitlin Bernard. Last year, Dr. Bernard made national news after she provided abortion care to a 10-year-old and then discussed it with the Indianapolis Star. Rokita went on Fox News to discuss that incident shortly after and called Bernard an abortion activist acting as a doctor with a history of failure to report. No such history existed. The State Disciplinary Commission says those comments, as well as other remarks by Rokita to the media, in which he discussed an investigation into Bernard before he brought a case to the Medical Licensing Board, violate Indiana's rules of professional conduct for attorneys. Rokita defended his remarks, saying he was fulfilling his official duties and that Bernard gave up any right to confidentiality when she spoke to the Indy Star. Will this disciplinary complaint ultimately impact Todd Rokita in any significant way? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And O'Shea Boyd, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Local News Initiative. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House Bureau Chief Brandon Smith. Before we talk about Todd Rokita, if you were listening, that was a different title for Ms. Boyd over here. Congratulations on your new gig that you just started.
Thank you.
We're all very excited for the local news initiative. Ann Delaney, Curtis Hill, the last attorney general before Todd Rokita, got his law license suspended for 30 days for criminally battering four women, even if Rokita is disciplined. And there's a long way to go before that might happen. What at most can we realistically expect?
Well, I think you could expect a much harsher penalty. I mean, I think what Curtis Hill did was absolutely reprehensible, okay? And it showed flawed conduct and it showed flawed judgment. But it didn't abuse the office. He wasn't into using his office to abuse people, which is a sharp difference with Todd Rokita. Todd Rokita is using his position as attorney general not just to advance himself politically by appealing to the right-wing crazies in the Republican Party, but he's using it to intimidate, like he's trying to intimidate IU and intimidate Dr. Bernard, because he doesn't want any meaningful discussion about what the abortion ban means for children like that 10-year-old. He doesn't want people talking. He wants to pretend it doesn't happen. Well, you know what? It does. And I think using his office the way he has to achieve the goal that he wants politically, I think, is much, much worse conduct. And he's basically admitted that he violated the canons in his response that he put out. Of course, he doesn't mention the statute that he also went, meaning that he also broke the law in addition to the canons of ethics. So I think that the Supreme Court could look at this and the Disciplinary Commission could look at this and recommend a stronger penalty.
This did ultimately, I mean, The Indiana Supreme Court disciplining Curtis Hill did have an impact on Curtis Hill. He lost renomination at the Indiana Republican Party convention. Even if Todd Rokita is disciplined, given what he would be disciplined for, is he likely to face similar consequences?
We'll see. The Republican side is a little crowded as far as contested primaries and potentially a contested convention for lieutenant governor.
That's true.
Look, Dr. Bernard shouldn't have conducted herself the way she did. The Medical Licensing Board agreed and took care of that.
It opened the question.
And that should be, but for Rokita, enough. Don't sue IU Health. Don't keep on this crusade. What he is doing, so Republicans, I think the vast majority of Republicans wanted to see restrictions put on abortion rights, and they got that. What Rokita is doing is legitimizing the left that has said it's never going to be enough. They want to go after the doctors. They want to go after the women getting abortions over state lines. The vast majority of Republicans don't want that. Rokita's doing nothing in this crusade but legitimizing the worst fears of people that I still think a vast majority of Republicans don't agree with.
I want to make one point on that, okay? The way Rokita defines HIPAA is not the way the statute defines
it. But it was the way that the Medical Licensing Board decided to define...
Who gave him a parachute so that he wouldn't be totally embarrassed by his ridiculous complaint.
Early in the business, like him in parachutes. That's a kangaroo.
You can't
enforce.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
If his definition of HIPAA is correct, that means the governor appearing the day after the first COVID death with that doctor violated HIPAA. Because he said a 55-year-old man died in Marion County yesterday. If it isn't individually identifiable as the way the statute requires, then the governor is guilty of HIPAA.
I don't think he's going to be brought up before the medical licensing board.
Funny thing.
The question I asked at the top was, is Todd Rokita, if he's disciplined, and that is an if at this point, if he is disciplined, will he have any significant consequences? And realistically, will he?
You have to wonder. Presumably, he's engaged in the kind of conduct he has. And by conduct, I mean constantly sort of throwing bombs at in sort of a very partisan, not just partisan, but in a very ideological way that appeals to a certain faction of the Republican Party.
But that's been his style for a decade.
And that has been his style. And it seems to be working. Mm-hmm. And it's part of, I think, indicative of a real shift we've seen in the way we judge elected officials and politicians. It used to be how effective somebody could be, how qualified, how competent, how able someone was to deliver good government, whatever role he or she was in. Mm-hmm. Now it seems the greater reward is reserved for those who can be the most vocal, the most strident, the most active in bomb throwing. A lot of the battles he has waged, they're losing battles, and they end up costing state taxpayers
money.
Dollars because look at this one now at $550 an hour.
I saw a WRTV story, I think just yesterday or today, that it was something like near $200,000 so far.
And the Indiana Citizen Foundation has also reported that those same $550 an hour lawyers somehow managed to contribute to Rokita's campaign.
I would just also point out that for anybody assessing this, if you know the way that the makeup and the function of the Supreme Court Disciplinary Commission, you understand this is not just some outfit that goes and sort of says, hey, on a lark, we're going to do this. This is a very by the book. I mean, if you look at the makeup of
the
group,
it's a high bar.
It's a very high bar. These are very competent, very well-regarded attorneys. I've known several of them for decades, and these are the real deal.
Yeah. I asked, will Todd Rokita be impacted by this in any significant way? We've been kind of talking about would he be impacted negatively. If he is disciplined, doesn't he get to go and parade that mm-hmm. I'm fighting mm-hmm. for the unborn and they're attacking me for it? Arguably, will this help him more than anything else?
For his base, yes, definitely for his base. I mean, it sounds like for him and I think this is a calculated move on his part. He recognizes that. He's looking like he's standing up on the right side. I'm on the right side of history. I'm for the righteous. So those who believe what he believes, this is a good thing. Yeah. This is definitely a good thing.
But not for a majority of Hoosiers.
Well, I'd think a majority of Hoosiers probably reelect him next year.
Oh, I think if you asked a majority of Hoosiers, they would say we should restore the abortion law the way it was before the Republicans took control.
But you've got to assume that a majority of Hoosiers can connect all these dots.
Yeah. Oh, that's where money comes in.
Exactly. Time now, and Democrats have been short of that for a while.
So we're going to win.
Time now.
Maybe not for Attorney General this time.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, should Todd Rokita be disciplined by the Indiana Supreme Court? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, does President Biden deserve to be impeached? 13% of you say yes, 87% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A recent report says girls in Indiana face alarming increases in serious mental health concerns and that the state is witnessing generational trauma in the making. And yet, mental health care in schools is under unprecedented attacks from conservative activists.
According to the recently released Indiana Girl Report from the Indiana Youth Institute and Girl Coalition of Indiana, nearly half of all 7th through 12th grade girls in the Hoosier State experienced depression last year, and 1 in 4 seriously considered suicide. Girls in Indiana are more likely to be the target of bullying than boys. In 2021, girls were admitted for inpatient care at hospitals more than 3 times as often as boys, and girls reported experiencing sexual dating violence at 5 times the rate of boys. Those issues all show up in the classroom. Krista Fay oversees wellness programs in Avon schools.
If you are coming in and your anxiety is overwhelming you, if your chest is so tight that you can't breathe, if your thoughts are racing, how are you going to be available to hear that instruction?
The Indiana Department of Education, meanwhile, quietly removed resources from a page about social, emotional, and behavioral wellness off its public website, including the state's Social Emotional Learning Toolkit. The toolkit and other materials are now posted on a portal for educators that requires users to log in and enter an enrollment key. The state says it was part of an overhaul of the website to help make it easier to use. Advocates say it's a response to right-wing attacks.
Mike O'Brien, how do we confront the fact that mental health is more at risk than ever among young people? And, of course, the pandemic making that exponentially worse, particularly for girls. But it's also under attack more than it seems ever before.
One, I believe all of that. I believe all of that data, and I've got 14-year-old who just started high school, daughter, and a 10-year-old coming behind her. So it's very top of mind in our house, thinking about paying attention to them. What's happening?
Yeah.
You know, are they okay? That said, I don't totally agree with the premise of this, that it's under attack in Indiana. Not that it's not under attack, I guess, but that's effective. That is working. If you look at the track record from the last legislative session, literally Senate Bill 1, the top priority of Republicans, was entirely focused on putting hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into mental health. We passed a public health law that Governor Holcomb led. I got a call from Politico after that passed. They go, "How did you do that? Every other red state we're looking at is banning, like doing a statutory ban on masks and defunding local health departments, and you're doing the opposite. How does that happen?" So I don't agree that the premise of this is in Indiana, this is under attack. The DOE thing, moving that to the portal, that's where teachers go find resources. If my daughter's got a problem, she's not going to find the social emotional toolkit off of IN.gov. She's going to, if you put it on Instagram, she might find it. But I agree with the problem, but I think Indiana has made major steps forward to try to address it.
I will say, we saw mental health care in schools, we saw bill after bill for years really struggle to do anything meaningful if they get passed at all. I can think about Mike Kreider, who authored Senate Bill 1 this session, who had been working on these sorts of issues for a long time and had been stymied, it seemed like, over and over again. It did feel like that was different this year. Is perhaps that a reflection of the problem has gotten so serious that more and more people are having trouble, not having trouble, but can't ignore it?
Or realize that it's there.
Yeah.
And that's true. The transition for girls from grade school to high school is traumatic at best. And with social media out there, you can be bullied by people you never even laid eyes on. So the problem is pronounced. And I hope we've recognized that it is a serious health issue, not just mental health, but health issue. And I really applaud Jim Irsay for the series of ads that they've had on the football adjacencies, talking about the fact that mental health is an issue and that people need to seek help. I think the more we destigmatize that condition, the more we'll be able to treat it effectively outside of ideology.
I want to point out, we have, for those who are watching, the National Crisis Hotline on the screen. You can call, text, or visit 988indiana.org, and you can call, again, 988, which is a relatively new, it's been around for about a year in Indiana, this incredibly valuable resource. I just did a story, I think last week, about, you know, Indiana is leading the nation in the percentage of calls to 988 from Indiana that get answered in Indiana. And that's important for connecting people to the right resources as quickly as possible. Those calls, on average, are picked up within 10 seconds.
That's great.
It's a fantastic resource. If you or anyone you know needs help, 988 is the place to go. I want to ask about, she just talked about stigma. The Indianapolis Colts are leading the NFL,
right,
the players and organization, in advocating for mental health care. Stigma still remains a problem.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of progress in that area, but especially for young people. Have we started to reach a point that more and more people are finally recognizing the importance of, you know, it's not weakness, that it is like any other, you know,
just,
if you break your
illness.
Leg, you go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel a shift in that right
I
now?
I definitely feel a shift, and I think we've had this shift happening pretty much since the pandemic, since 2020. But I feel, though, as though we take a step forward, two steps back. We talk about protecting children. We talk about all these things we want to do so that we're not harming children. And then we do things. We have adults bullying children at the state house. So it's like we make efforts to improve, and then we do other things that take us back. So I would like to see, like, a for real concerted effort to really focus on children in a real way that really impacts children, what they need, not what adults think that children need, but actually have some children say what they need. Where can we help improve your lives? We need to talk to kids. And I don't feel like we talk to kids. We talk to adults what we think kids need.
She brings up something, John. I don't think there are a lot of silver linings from the COVID-19 pandemic, unfortunately. The public health bill in Indiana is probably one of them, quite frankly, right. This recognition of the importance of local public health initiatives. Is a greater recognition of mental health as a problem that needs to be confronted and not weakness that has to be hidden or ignored, is that a silver lining of the pandemic?
Well, it's an inevitable result of the pandemic. I think if there's a family that has not been touched by some aspect of a mental health problem, that person is probably delusional or somehow detached from reality, or they've ignored it.
Or they're the luckiest family in America.
Or they're the luckiest family. It is an equal opportunity disease, affliction. And I don't think, to get a little bit more nuanced on this political division which you talked about in the open, it's not that there's a caucus that says, I'm supportive of depression, anxiety, and schizophrenia. And most people would say, I want to see treatment. The hang-up, just to be specific, is it's about parental rights and the role of government interacting with young people, vulnerable young people, and how that should manifest itself, whether counselors should be in place to conduct screenings without parental approval. Because oftentimes, if a parent is objecting to a child being screened, my guess is the parents probably are part of the problem. So
that's certainly something you would jump to.
It would certainly could be a contributing factor, exacerbating a problem that's hardwired. But we won't know because there's that desire to help people with mental illness, but the denial that it could possibly be my child. And two, we don't want some government employee coming and standing between me and my... That's the problem. And it's the result is just as insidious, but it's more nuanced than just for or against.
Right. Well, some Indiana voter advocates say Hoosiers are shortchanged when lawmakers resign in the middle of their terms. Four legislators have stepped down this year, including two state senators who left office less than a year into their new four-year terms. Common Cause Indiana's Julia Vaughn says it's particularly frustrating when lawmakers leave less than a year after being reelected.
These are not folks who are new to the legislature, who weren't familiar with the demands that the office has. These were experienced legislators. So I really wish they had thought longer and better and more into the future.
Under state law, lawmakers who leave their seats early are replaced by private partisan caucuses. Vaughn says it shouldn't be party insiders who get to choose. She wants to see special elections.
One of the arguments that has been made against having special elections in these cases is the expense. So perhaps as a deterrent, we could require the retiring legislator to chip in for the cost of a special election.
Vaughn acknowledges that's extremely unlikely, but says lawmakers should find a way for voters to have more of a say in replacing legislators who step down. Before we discuss this topic, I want to talk about something that happened this week that we are not talking about in this topic, which is, unfortunately, the Indiana Senate lost a member this week. Senator Jack Sandlin passed away suddenly. Our thoughts and prayers are with his family and his friends and his caucus, certainly. That is, of course, not what Julia Vaughn is talking about with this, you know, somewhat tongue-in-cheek idea of charging lawmakers if they resign early. As she noted, there are exceptions and should be exceptions. There are people who step away for illness, for caretaking purposes.
For death.
and sadly, it's been a little while, I guess in good news, but this is awful news this week. We're not talking, obviously, about that sort of situation. But when we talk about lawmakers leaving the General Assembly early of their own volition, is there a better way forward for Indiana, John?
Well, in terms of the replacement process, certainly there are lots of methods. And if you look at what states around the country do, there's Well, if you had any majority, there's not even a majority, but 50 states, or 25 do basically a special election. So that's the most common. 9, I think, have gubernatorial appointments. And then others have either local commissioners or some elected officials. Others maybe have the lawmakers themselves. The remaining members of the chamber will decide. Only 4 states, including Indiana, have the way we do, where political parties come together, representatives, and I think it's Illinois, North Dakota, Indiana.
Well, that might be the way to change. If we just tell them this is the way Illinois does it,
that might be enough.
Knowing how that goes down
to the state house, they can change it. They can change it.
That'll be it.
We're in a distinct minority. So, does that mean we're one of the 4 smart states, or are there 25 other states that are smarter?
I think the cost can't be ignored here, which is elections in general are costly. There wouldn't also be that many of them. I mean, but enough that, I mean, this is, we don't have 1 or 2 a year who leave the General Assembly. The last 10 years or so, we've averaged in a cycle more than 4. It's been, you know, in nearly 10 sometimes.
And by the way, Colorado's the other one. I couldn't remember it. For those keeping score.
We've also had seasons where we haven't had that.
It's been a while since we've had that.
In modern times, the turnover rate in the General Assembly has been incredible. It's a reason in and of itself for no term limits to go against that.
Is the cost ultimately too high to move to a special election model?
I don't think so. I feel like as a voter, I'm shortchanged if the person I voted for does not stay in office, and then the party gets to decide who my representative is. So I don't feel like the cost is too high. We need to have true representation. So those are my thoughts. I don't think it's too high.
You can argue about the special election, which was what you'd have to do for state representatives. But for state senators like this, you could put them on the next general election ballot.
And Julia talked about that, too, is even fitting them into, like, a municipal election if they...
Yeah.
Now, in the case of John Ford, that wouldn't have worked because the ballots had already gone out. But with a couple earlier this year, fitting them into existing elections, is that a way Indiana should go?
I think that's a smart way to do it. It doesn't incur additional expense. The runway's not really that long. I mean, you're talking about that. If we did it that way, this person would be appointed by the caucus, which I think they should be. I think the party has to intervene here. We talked about party politics a few weeks ago, and in a similar situation. But so I think the party should pick the person to fulfill the term, but that term should probably cycle into the next general election when the General Assembly is elected. So in this case, your primary election would be in 24, your general in 24, then have them run again to stay on the cycle. So you have 25.
Right. Exactly.
There's states that do that.
We have the answer right here.
We do it with U.S. Senate, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we just saw it with Jackie Walorski. Technically, there was a special election to fill out the very small remainder of her term.
Right.
And then at the same time, an election
to fill.
This
way to layer it into the process without adding another part of it.
U.S. Senator Mike Braun, who's also a Republican candidate for governor, announced this week he's endorsing Donald Trump for president. In a statement, Braun called the former president a businessman and outsider and praised him for appointing Supreme Court justices who overturned abortion rights, something Trump has danced around openly celebrating in recent months. Trump is leading the Republican primary field for president by a wide margin, according to polling. He won Indiana's general election by 19 points in 2016 and about 16 points in 2020. Braun's Senate colleague, Todd Young, has been open about his opposition to Trump's candidacy this cycle, arguing that other candidates give Republicans up and down the ballot a better chance of succeeding. O'Shea Boyd, this feels weird to ask about the endorsement of a former president and the leader at this point of the primary nomination process. But is there any downsides in Indiana to endorsing Donald Trump?
Downside other than endorsing someone who tried to steal the election?
to a lot of Hooters, I don't think they think that way.
I don't really think there is, except for a certain small group of people, including me. So I think there are people who definitely think that endorsing former President Trump makes sense and is the right answer. It's really too early to tell where things are going to play out since we're, in September. But I think he's still a favorite. I mean, he's still favored by a lot of people, so we shall see.
Yeah, I mean, there are other serious candidates in this primary pool, including Indiana's own Mike Pence.
But is there any downside for Mike Braun to saying Donald Trump's my guy?
Well, there's a short-term game here and a long-term game. Short-term, I don't think there's any negative because he's playing to a constituency that's probably says, yeah, that's what we want. And obviously 10 other members of the Senate have already done the same thing. So there must be some perceived value in that. The reason I say there's also a longer-term game is that history, I don't think, will look kindly on this. Now,
some political consultants could say
who cares as long as they get past the next election. But I think all of this, when history is written, whenever that is, will say that it was sad to see so many people. And I know nobody's been convicted yet. So let's not convict him here. But when there is doubt.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Oshia Boyd of the Indiana Local News Initiative. You can find Indiana Week in Review's podcast and episodes at wfyi.org/IWIR or on the PBS app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.